Every morning before we went on duty, we had to go through the fumigation department, and also before we left at night. And the mortuaries were so full, we had the patients lying one on top of the other.
And it was like the plague must have been. People were walking about with their eyes and noses running and their eyes red and sore, and they died like flies, so that the undertakers couldn't cope with them, and there weren't enough coffins to go round, and they had to keep people longer than they should have done.
It was a tragedy beyond comprehension. After years of war, now disease. Soldiers who had survived the trenches, civilians who had weathered shortages and bombardment, now faced a new enemy. A virus tore through societies already weakened by war. Desperate governments teetering on the edge of revolution were terrified of reporting outbreaks, embracing strict wartime censorship for fear of damaging morale still further. Only in neutral Spain could the press speak freely about what was happening, giving the impression that that was where the disease had come from. And from this, it took its nickname, Spanish Flu.
And we were nursing all these desperately ill men. Some of them had been all through the front and escaped and then died like flies. Great big beefy guardsmen. It seemed as if the Germans preferred them to the wizened little cockneys. They died like flies.
Walking from the hospital to my digs, we had to stand and with bowed heads. The funerals were passing by. Sometimes it took so long to get there, I had to give up going. It was so terrible. The funerals were going on all the time.
As the world staggered through yet more months of the most destructive war in history, people who had been spared the worst of the trenches were now struck down by an unseen killer. It was particularly devastating against young adults. Soldiers were killed before they ever reached the front or when they came home on leave. It's impossible to place ourselves in the shoes of our forebears who experienced this only 100 years ago. It must have made them feel like their world was truly cursed.
We really wondered at one time whether we'd be able to carry on. It spread through the army like a bushfire. But the war was at a standstill.
The first wave of the virus arrived in May and June 1918. The origins may have been in China. The first cases were noted in American military camps in Kansas. Wherever it began, the new strain went global, thanks to the movement of troops around the world. In September 1918, the second wave arrived and entered its most lethal phase. George Jameson was an officer serving on the Western Front in 1918.
We were really run right down to bedrock. That was terrible. The hospitals just couldn't accommodate them. So I was sent down to the wagon line to organise a sort of casualty clearing station on the wagon line. Tents with all the walls rolled up, fellows lying in beds there. I mean, I was a sort of unofficial doctor on the job, and so reduced that one driver was looking after about a dozen horses instead of two. It was quite terrific.
There was a shortage of both medical personnel and of medicine. Leonard Gordon Davis was a mechanic with the RAF.
The doctor was treating these people with aspirins and what have you, I suppose, and he ran out of all his supplies. Then we got into very high temperatures and we had to stay in bed. The doctor said, well, we've no means of bringing the temperature down, we've got to take some drastic action. And those of us who had a very high temperature, we were told to sit in our beds, and he came along with buckets of cold water and chucked them over us. And that brought the temperature down and our spirits as well.
It caught you suddenly, you know, the flu at that time. You were struck down without any warning.
At home too, hospitals were overwhelmed, as Jack Dorgan recalls.
Well, I was a physically fit man. I was on a PT course, physical training course. In fact, all the hospitals were full and tents were erected in all the hospital grounds in and about York.
It brought down the young, the fit, the strong, and quickly. A cataclysm in a time of war.
We got it in May and June 1918. Nice summer's day.
And how many got it?
Oh, there must have been in our lot, 200 in our lot. It affected your limbs. You couldn't really stand upright.
Private Bill Smedley stationed in the Somme area in 1918.
A general came round outside the officer's tent and wanted to know why we didn't stand to attention. I'll jump to attention. And he played steam because the senior NCO was in the doctor's, being examined by the doctor. And the doctor could hear this commotion outside and he came out. And he more or less told his general where to go, that these men weren't fit even to stand to attention, let alone salute, general salute. So he just parted off with his tail between his legs, this general. And I admired him for that since, medical profession. Because the only young captain out there, or MC, mind you, he was right, quite correct.
Back at home, the impact was felt just as keenly. The Imperial War Museum archives contain several interviews with women and men who were schoolchildren in 1918. Margaret Clenahan and Edwin Hiles recall a world which ground to a halt and in which they had to take charge.
The four members of the family, my two brothers, my mother and father, had this flu. And I didn't. I had no flu at all. And so therefore I had to look after them, because there was a scarcity of doctors and nurses because they also had the flu.
Several people in the street were confined to their beds, and as a little boy I used to go into the street door, which was usually kept open by a house brick. Street doors were open all the time. And I went into the house upstairs, found a person concerned to be lying in the bed, and she would say, "Would you go and get me a pint of milk, some potatoes?" And lying in the next room, somebody else would be ill. In fact, the whole family would be ill.
A nurse came to the house and she said that the only thing that could help my brother would be brandy. Well, I was only 11 and she said that she couldn't go and get the brandy. My father was not a drinking man, but I was told to go to a public house and get brandy. And I can remember going in and all these men, and all, I looked on them with horror because they were drinking. But I went up to the counter and I got the brandy and I brought it away, and I had to give my brother spoonfuls of brandy so many times a day, and he survived.
Margaret Clenahan recalled that in Harwich, the church bells were often ringing, tolling for those who had died. It was the same throughout the country.
They were burying them open, eh? Dropping them in open graves because there were nobody to do the work of digging. Oh, it was a strong epidemic.
Places like Catterick Camp or something like that, where there were thousands of troops all congregated together, and the infection could be passed like wildfire. We were very busy carrying coffins. See, a soldier might die in a Catterick camp, and his parents might want the body home for burial, and they could put the body in a coffin and send it to St Pancras or King's Cross or Euston. Somebody have to transport it from Euston Station to Paddington or wherever it was appropriate to ship it on to their parents. And I did a lot of that. Okay, oh, yeah. We're always at it now.
It came down to company by company. Everybody was flat. The Germans outside in Germany, the civilians died like flies because they had nothing, they had no milk, they had nothing, they were starving.
Edmund Williams was a prisoner of war in a camp in the St Quentin sector from March 1918.
The Germans were down. One morning, one day we were all on our feet for roll call. The next morning, nobody could get out of their beds. The Germans tried to get us up. But with us it wasn't a killer. The Russians were fatalistic. They turned their faces to the wall and died silently. The French grumbled about it. The Italians just gave up. Once you got below a certain viable strength, they went down. I saw the national character most clearly etched, and I've never forgotten it. The British were still the most battling, so to speak, the most resistant.
And the overcrowded trenches and camps of the First World War became the perfect breeding grounds for the disease.
The Germans were fixed the same way. We could see them lying in the sun on stretchers in no man's land. Well, on top of the trenches, sunning themselves. Yeah, it affected them. And there's no pushes or anything like that. They couldn't find sufficient forces, both sides. It was rather quiet then.
Were you actually put in a hospital, or were you just in the medical?
Oh, no, you're put nowhere. No, you're in the trenches, still outside. Oh, everybody outside, yeah. Oh, no hospital.
The flu pandemic left almost no part of the world untouched. In Britain, almost a quarter of a million died. The United States lost almost 700,000 people. Researchers estimate that in India alone, fatalities totaled between 12 and 17 million. Alexander Davidson and Norman Collins were serving there in the Lucknow garrison.
My regiment, my old regiment, lost more casualties with the flu epidemic than through the rest of the war, the whole war.
Did the flu epidemic strike in India?
Oh, God, yes. It swept right through India. My old regiment, the Queen's, in 3 weeks of flu, lost more men than all the casualties for the rest of the war. And there was no such thing as penicillin or anything like that in those days. Invariably, if you got pneumonia, especially if you got double pneumonia, you had your chips.
And I remember seeing the bodies being kept on the move in the river at Lucknow by natives with bamboo canes, because they couldn't possibly burn the bodies, there were too many of them. So they just let them drift down the river and go out to sea.
No reckoning of the First World War can be made without including the impact of influenza. The timing and intensity owed so much to the catastrophic dislocation caused by war. The disease found its perfect habitat in the overcrowded, filthy camps full of traumatised, weakened soldiers. The war, begun by old men to shore up their empires and the world order, had immediately slipped from their grasp, destroying those empires, laying waste to regions, nurturing revolution, starvation, and now disease. Even as the war entered its final year, there was only tragedy. For Caroline Reynolds, a child at the time, the flu would overshadow Armistice Day itself.
Through my dad died 2 days before the armistice, darling, so that I was, and I loved my dad, you know. We were lucky we knew an undertaker, so that my dad was buried within about a week or so, but some of the poor things was lying for 2 or 3 weeks. They couldn't bury them. See, they never had the men to do it, to make the coffins or nothing. But I don't remember nothing about the armistice, really. Not a lot, because, as I say, like, I was in so much trouble.